This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I am Greg Crumpton coming at you today from beautiful Greenville, South Carolina. Where it's a little cold and overcast, but we're heading into spring. I guess I'm kind of like the groundhog. I'm looking forward to it. Good week, everybody. I hope you've had a good weekend and we're ready for some excitement and some fun today. Today we have a gentleman who met a few months ago, Mr. Jeremy Clark. And Jeremy is the training and development leader at Carolina Chillers down in Charleston, South Carolina, with offices scattered around the Carolinas. But Jeremy, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, Greg. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to being on here.
Well, I'm glad you say that at the beginning. We'll see how you feel at the end of the show. But no kidding, man. I'm glad to have you. I've enjoyed getting to know you a bit and having some good conversations. So before we get going too deep, why don't you give us a little sampling of what Jeremy is, what Jeremy does, and all the good stuff that gets you up in the morning.
So as you said it, I'm the training and development leader at Carolina Chillers in Charleston. And I kind of started my career. My dad was in construction, owned a framing and remodeling business in North Carolina. And eventually, around 2009, got hired at a small residential HVAC company. That's where everything started. And so worked there for about 5 years. The owner took me under his wing and taught me everything he knew, or tried to teach me everything he knew. And then moved up into the commercial world after I moved out of my little small town. Did some data center cooling, which I didn't know you were into. And now I found that out. But yeah, I did data center cooling with a company out of Charlotte and learned a lot there. And then when I moved to Charleston, I started working for a company as a commercial and industrial service technician for HVAC. And after about 3 years of being a service tech there, I moved into sales. I did project sales, so kind of like a sales engineer for about 6 years. And then eventually just kind of got a little burnout on it, but just kind of wanted to move to something different. So I took a little sabbatical to figure out what I wanted to do. Ended up taking a controls job with CMS Controls, who's our sister company, who's also owned by Service Logic. And then the leadership here was talking about kind of problems in recruiting and development and training. And so I had already brought something to my last company about being a training leader, and they had a different thing in mind. So talking to the leaders here, though, after a few months, they said, yeah, this is something we need. So they got the job together, and I applied and interviewed and got it, and started officially on January 6th of this year.
Now, that tells me what's wrong with you hearing that. I didn't know all that. And I had to quickly glance back at your resume to see where you worked in the data center world. And I went, wow, I know those guys. So funny stuff. Funny.
Yeah, they're a good company to work for. And they were, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew Kip. Kip and I grew up in the Atlanta market together at McKinney's.
Really?
Yeah.
No doubt.
Way back in the day. Back in the day. Well, man, you know, I love the fact that you've done so much in the field of HVAC controls, data center, because, I mean, it's the best thing ever, what else could any human strive for? But it makes you so well-rounded when you get to touch all those different disciplines, in my view. People talk about HVAC and there's this mental thing that comes upon people and they think about you crawling under a house or in someone's attic. They don't understand how wide of a breadth the industry is. And look at your resume, you've proven that, you know, you go from a smaller shop all the way to working for, you know, the biggest private equity, privately owned company in the U.S. in the HVAC world. So cool story, man. Cool story.
Thank you.
What little town did you grow up in?
I grew up in a little town called Pittsboro, North Carolina. It's about 30 minutes outside of Chapel Hill. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people know it now because it's gotten a lot bigger since I moved from there. But back in the day when I grew up, actually me and my wife grew up there, and I think it was, you know, a two stoplight town with a Pizza Hut and a Food Lion that was basically the only landing spots in the town.
Well, so, I remember Pittsboro from the interstate sign, so I don't know that I've ever been to the Food Lion or the Pizza Hut, but I'm sure I've been through there. But well, tell me about what you're doing, because the training and development piece, Jeremy, is so important for our company, plural, ours are together, but more so for the industry at large, you know. And you and I wear a navy blue shirt most days for Service Logic, but you know, I think that you probably have a wider view than just our company. You're an industry kind of looking guy, as I am. So how does that help you, like when you're, you know, making your plans or thinking about what you want to train and develop? How do you think through, like, what are some of your thoughts of how do I want to do this? What do I want to deliver and why?
So I guess throughout my experience of basically almost 20 years in the industry, I've really recognized, I think about 15 years ago, I really started recognizing, you know, the skilled worker gap that we have going on in the industry, and how all of the senior people and people that had really taken me under their wings and given me opportunities are kind of on their way out of the industry now, just through retirement. And I'm very happy for them, which is, and they've made a great career out of it and everything like that. But, you know, seeing that there were not really a lot of people my age getting into the industry or the trades altogether. Most of the people, I'm a millennial, so most of the people my age were heavily influenced to go to college. I don't have any kind of incredible story about that. I didn't go to college because I was not a good student. And I liked making money a lot more than I liked going to school. So that was my kind of excuse. But either way, I think that the HVAC industry and the trades at large really helped me through life, where even though a lot of the times I didn't really know and understand where I was going and what I was doing, I had somebody that had really that was mentoring me through wherever I was working and kind of showing me the right way to do things. So basically what I came into this job thinking is, for one thing, there is a correct way to do most of the things that we do every day. There's a correct way to do maintenance. There's a correct way to replace a compressor. You know, it doesn't have to be just a stringent list of tasks or anything like that, because you do have to be creative at some point. But, you know, you don't have to be out there and kind of guessing at what you're doing, because there's information, you know, thank goodness there's the internet now. But, you know, we have a saying in the industry, RTFM, you know, read the fantastic manual. And
fantastic being the key word.
Yes, exactly. Fantastic. So I've seen just people kind of my age and younger kind of just flailing through their career. And I think that I can help people to try and figure out, you know, at least a vision of a path that they want to go on, because this company or this industry has really provided me with like a prosperous life. And, you know, I mean, financially, I have done better than I ever thought I would as a kid that never went to college. So really what I envision is creating career paths for people who, you know, may not have ever thought they would have one. I'm helping with recruiting also into the industry. And then really having a standard for the quality of work that we put out, because you know, the second most important thing in our industry is the customer. I think the first important or first most important thing is the technician usually, but the second most important thing is the customer. And we really, the way you kind of go over and above for your customer, whether it's through communication, whether it's through, you know, being able to do work that actually is pretty, whether it's, you know, vacuuming off a filter grill in their ceiling, because that's the only thing that they see, just going over and above for your customer, that shows that you really care about what you do.
You know, that is such a profound statement. The filter grill, you know, how many times have you walked into an establishment, bathroom, whatever, and, you know, geeks like us, we always look up, you know, at the duct system.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, how hard would it be? And I know it's not hard because I've done it 100 times at least, to get a damp paper towel and wipe the freaking grill off just to make it better. It wasn't perfect, but better. And my company I used to have, which, you know, holds a soft spot in my heart, Airtight. One of our core values was do one extra step in everything you do. So if the SOP calls for 9 steps, do 10. And that can be anything from, ma'am, thank you for letting me work on your air conditioner, can I get you a cup of coffee, to, can I change a light bulb for you? I mean, just one more thing, and it goes so far. And you know it goes far because you're a consumer. You know how that feels when somebody does it to you.
Absolutely.
And I think that I've got an article that I've been monkeying around with writing since July, when I had my gallbladder cut out. The hospital experience was absolutely horrible. Great people working in the hospital, they didn't communicate between day shift, night shift, blood people. You know, nobody talks to each other, and they were super good at what they did in their bubble. But if you tried to make those bubbles touch, it didn't happen. And it was a weird thing, but I wound up going in on a Friday night, and I wasn't like acute enough to where they wanted to do emergency surgery. So they decided I would wait till Monday. So I'm laying there, you know, I mean, you're not thoroughly fully comfortable, obviously, when your gallbladder looks like a green lava pit. But I was like, can I eat anything? And they're like, the nurse is like, sure, you can eat this. She gave me a menu. Okay. Then the food person would roll down the hallway. No, we don't have anything for you. I'm like, okay, something isn't right. And then, and I know that's an exaggeration or one point to exaggerate, but there were several little nuanced things like that. And I thought, if everybody could just collaborate a little bit and do one more thing, like feed this dude who all he wanted was some orange and cello, he'd be fine. You know, just a little something.
Yeah.
But I'm going to work on that article, but it goes back to what your point was. Change the game. Do your stuff. Do your 9 steps or 27 steps or whatever your task is. But how do you personalize it? How are you differentiating yourself from the herd by doing one more little thing? And that one little bitty thing makes you look like a you know, wonder boy. Like, whoever thought about changing the light bulb because he had a ladder here and he knew how to do it. You know, that little stuff matters, I think, as a consumer.
Yeah, I've always kind of thought that's not my job is not a statement I ever want to hear. I mean, yeah, like you said, if you have a ladder and there's a light bulb that needs to be replaced, you know, why not do it? And then, I mean, it's not like you're not going to get, if you want credit, you can get credit because you can tell the customer, hey, I just saw this light bulb was off. Reached into your storage room and grabbed you a light bulb, went ahead and replaced it. And they will be, the effort that it took you, they will be 10 times as thankful as the effort that you put in to replacing that light bulb. It's just the attention to detail. And that, and you know, I mean, that's something that I learned in sales was, and it wasn't the extra step thing, but it was learning to differentiate yourself and
Sure.
show people that you care. And I think that, you know, I liked sales because it was being able to get to know people. And, you know, at some point you're thinking in front of this person, you're like, I'm trying to sell them something. But at the end of my career in sales, it was like, no, this is a friend of mine who is just telling me what they need, and I'm just helping them get it.
Yeah, I believe for me, educational selling is the way that I made a career. I'm not a good sales guy. I'm a good problem solver, and I know how to think through a problem, but I'm really poor at pitching, quote unquote. I'm more about, hey, Jeremy, that air handler up there, we got to start planning, and here's why. You know, it's downtime, it's lead time, whatever are the valid reasons. My job is to bring it to your attention, put together a proposal that you understand, that's not chock full of acronyms and a bunch of crap nobody cares about. It's more about when can we do it that's less invasive, if that's something you're, if you care about. If you don't, you want to block the hallway and reroute everybody, that's your call. Let's talk it through. Let's talk about the efficiency gains of newer equipment. Let's talk about a warranty. I'm not going to hype you up on what color box it is. You know, I can care less if it's green, gray, or blue. It's just a fan and a coil to me, if it helps solve your problem. And to your point, you know, about the friend thing, I've got a lot of good friends now that started out as a customer that I met on the first sales call or the first service call or what have you. You know, I get that. I love that part, really. I do. I like the personalization of being able to interact with your customers at something other than, do you have a purchase order for me today? So anytime, you know, that I feel like you can make a personal connection with somebody, things just tend to go better in the long run. So what are some of the things that you've connected with? Like, are you more of a sports guy, fishing guy? I mean, what, how do you connect with people? You know, I mean, yes, you're there to talk about HVAC or controls or what have you, but what's worked well for you? What are some of the touch points that you feel like people enjoy talking with or meeting with you about?
That is a really good question, actually. I kind of, at first, I think, well, on the technician side, I mean, you know, we really, it's, you get all these funny stories about things that they find and like customers they deal with and everything like that. And I've been in the Charleston market for a long time. And so like our technicians and me, we can talk about different customers. We can talk about different sites, you know, what's been a pain in the butt to them on different sites. And that kind of has us connecting. When I first got into sales, I paid just enough attention to sports to be able to have somewhat of a discussion about it as kind of an icebreaker almost. But I growing up in North Carolina, I feel terrible that I got more into football because, you know, college football is like central there. But I used to be a sports fan, not really pay much attention anymore. I guess traveling. Yeah, I travel a good bit. Me and my wife do. So anytime anybody has any kind of travel stories or really just stories about where they come from and the cool things about where they come from, like I'd, you know, if it's somewhere in, I don't know, I'm going to choose something, New Hampshire, where somebody grew up and I've never even heard of the place, but if there's something cool there, then I want to hear about it. And I really want to, you know, try and connect with them on those things.
You know, I find too, like you were talking about with the travel, people love to talk about what they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're some stick in the mud that just wants to talk about building automation, you can only kind of build so much rapport before you get like, get out of my office, you geek. So it's
yeah, I think, you know, I used to work for a guy when I was selling that he would read a book, like he'd read the Challenger Sale or the Sandler Sales book or something like that. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, this is going to be our sales process. You know, in the Challenger Sale, they talk about relationship selling versus other kinds of selling and everything like that. And I think there's good nuggets in that stuff. And there's a good nugget in every book that you read. But I think that everything is relationship. You have to have some kind of rapport and relationship with people, unless you're selling them widgets that, you know, you're going to have them off the phone in 15 minutes. But the way that if you
could you imagine having to do that for a living?
I would not want to at all.
Selling, what if you were a ball bearing salesman? That'd be tough.
Yeah. How are your ball bearings better than the other ball bearings?
Right. Yeah. I've got a friend of mine, Jeffrey Gittimer, and he says people, his one of his quotes is, people hate to be sold, but they love to buy. And it's so true. You know, people get to a point, and I think this is for me anyway, if I'm calling on the store or the engineer or whatever, and I'm helping educate them on what we're doing, what they need, industry trends, changes, what have you, I don't expect them to buy something from me that day. My goal is when they get ready to buy, they know who told them about it or who educated them on it, so that you're top of mind. Not that I'm going there today and I'm going to take Paul to lunch and I'm going to get a purchase order. You know, that just doesn't work for me. I know it probably does for a lot of people, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a poor salesman. Self, I already said that.
I mean, I agree with you, though. I think I just relate it to, I was meeting with a CEO one time to sell a couple of crack units. And I brought my boss along. And
mistake.
I was figuring, you know, yeah, right. It was too. I was planning on going through this proposal, you know, the half hour meeting. I was, you know, doing all the steps and everything like that. Cause that's, I mean, I had sold that way before and people like to have the detail a lot of the time. Well, we get in there, I start going over this proposal and we start talking about, I think we started talking about bourbon, and he had just gone on the whiskey trail in Kentucky. And I had done it a few years back. And so we were just talking about, you know, relating to stories and everything like that. So I looked down at my watch. My boss is kicking into with the conversation, but I looked down at my watch and it's like 45 minutes in. And I'm like, oh, Mr. CEO, you know, I took up all your time. You know, I wanted to go through this proposal. And he's like, oh, well, just give it to me. And so, you know, I go and hand it to him and he looks, just flips right through to page 5 where the signature line is and the price is, just signs it. He's like, okay, well, I look forward to working with you. And that was it. There was no sales at all. There was nothing. It was just,
but it was,
you know,
genuine,
just a friendship,
you know,
mm-hmm.
But it was genuine. And that's the fun part about it, I think, is when you get to make a real connection. And that's not work, man. That's fun. When you get to enjoy a little bit of company and make a sale, like that's perfect. All right. So the training and development role is new to your company. What drove that? What was the, you know, the need? Is it strictly the, you've got to give people A, somewhere good to want to come to work. And then B, the people you have already working, you've got to get a career plan for. I mean, what was some of the thought process there?
I think most of it was the people, you know, I've worked for a few companies in Charleston market, and we have a lot less turnover than some that I've worked for. But we were still having turnover in 23 and 24. And the people that left when they would go through their exit interview or just, you know, their reasoning, a lot of it was because of not lack of training, but more of just the lack of infrastructure for the training. You know, I think a lot of companies want to train you, but then when it gets hot in the summer, you know, it's almost impossible to even fit that in. So a lot of employee retention was my kind of main purpose having this role, of having Carolina Chillers kind of open this role up. I'm secretly also trying to, you know, build standards in to what we do, so that we can take care of the customer better and everything like that. But yeah,
secretly,
I mean,
huh? That's why you're telling people the podcast.
Yeah, right.
Good secret.
But yeah, so it was a lot of the retention, and then having a kind of a plan in place for where you want to go. Because, you know, if you go out on the street or on a job site right now and you ask a technician, you know, hey, what do you want to be doing in 5 years? Most of my experience is, I don't know, or I just want to make more money. I guess I want to be a chiller tech because that's where the money is. And in my, you know, I mean, we do chillers. Our name is Carolina Chillers, but it is not the meat of what we do. You know, we're all commercial, all industrial HVAC. So we work on, you know, rooftop units. We work on large split systems. We work on large air handlers, just everything, boilers, hydronics, everything. And VRF especially. And so I just think that when people are asked what they want to do in a field that, you know, doesn't really, you don't know the opportunities that are there, you just kind of go for what you've heard is the most senior or the most money-making position. One of my goals for the next, you know, however long it takes, is to say, hey, you know, we definitely need some people that are good with chillers. Most of the time, we just need people that are not afraid of chillers, but we also need somebody that can be really, really good at rooftop units. And, you know, if you can just work on rooftop, we have a field service leader here who he's like, you know, I like working on chillers, but if I never worked on a chiller again, it wouldn't hurt me because Daikin Rebels are just as complex of a unit as some chillers. And I want to get people really good at working on those because we're going to start running into more of those.
Yeah. The other thing about the HVAC world is people aspire to be the service manager, but you only have one service manager for, you know, every dozen technicians or something like that. So the odds are not in the favor of that being your ultimate destiny. And then historically, our industry hasn't trained the incoming service manager to even know what to do, because last Friday, they were the Daikin Rebel Pro. Monday, okay, I'm now the service manager. What does that even mean? And, you know, I've talked to Eric Bowen about this, who, you know, runs our Edge training platform. And to Eric and I both agree that our ServiceLogic service manager is a very vital role in our company. It's not the same service manager role that a lot of companies have, which is a really well-seasoned technical support that has good admin around him or her. Our service manager is a real operator with P&L responsibility. I mean, it's a real job. And I think that it took us a while to understand how vital that spot for us was. But nonetheless, it's a limited opportunity just because of the numbers of how the ratios work of technician to manager. So having the different fields like you or verticals like you talked about, chillers, advanced rooftop equipment, VRV, whatever, there's probably a dozen you could list out easily. You do need excellence in every one of those distinct little vertical markets, because you can't know in everything anymore, especially in the electronic controls world, but where, you know, Daikin, for instance, you brought that brand of equipment up, they've got a whole catalog full of controllers that they can put on a whole bunch of different equipment. So just understanding the digital controls aspect of an air conditioner, not even being a digital control specialist, you really got to be good at that. VRV, VRF, same way. I think there's such a big opportunity for people to expand once they understand how wide the playing field is.
I absolutely agree. I mean, just since I've been in the industry, just controls on a mini split system or on a regular split like carrier system have become just crazy over and above with variable speed and everything like that. I mean, it's just something new every day, and keeping up with the industry is, I mean, it's a full-time job just trying to figure out what's going to happen next, what we're doing. You know, I mean, we've had this A2L change now, and, you know, unfortunately we have this thing in this industry where things don't get standardized very well sometimes. And, you know, I think that there's, I've, you know, done a lot of research on the A2Ls, and I have a certificate in it and everything like that now. And it's very not scary anymore since I know all this information. But for the guys that are out in the field every single day, you know, they're asking, hey, am I gonna, you know, is it unsafe to work on this stuff? And, you know, it's, I think that we need to say, hey, there's a certification out here for a person that wants to work with A2L, which is going to be almost everybody at some point soon. And we, you know, we have that lack of knowing in the industry, because, again, there's, you know, not a ton of younger generation that's coming into it to actually keep up and learn with these things.
Well, and just for you or your normal people, not weirdos like us, A2Ls is a classification for a mildly flammable refrigerant that we use in air conditioning now. The funny part to me, Jeremy, about A2L refrigerants is two things. For eons, which is a long time, we've ridden around with acetylene in our trucks that's like a bomb, and we've driven those acetylene tanks around in a truck full of gasoline. So a little bit of A2L is not a big deal. And to your point, once you understand the science of it, and I have intentionally tried to burn A2L refrigerant with a torch, and it will burn, but so will green pine trees if you get them hot enough or long enough.
Absolutely.
So, It's rather humorous once you see the contrast of truly explosive fumes and gases versus what we're dealing with. But to your point, we haven't done a good job as an industry ever of educating ourselves, but we always know who won American Idol or who won whatever show that is where the Masked Singer.
Well, and it wasn't until about 8 years into my career when I was out in the field that I actually started, you know, somebody had suggested I listen to Brian Orr's HVAC School podcast. And I think me and you have talked about Brian before, but, you know, I don't know Brian, but he is a personal hero of mine. I will listen to that man say anything. And he put me on to, you know, a lot of different podcasts like yours and Bill Spohn and a lot of others like Gary McCready. But
don't give that guy any credit.
Oh, yeah. I know you interviewed Gary a while back.
I consider Gary a friend. He's a
good guy. But yeah, I mean, if you really want to keep up to date on things like that, I mean, just listen to those podcasts. And for A2Ls, I thought it was pretty funny because I think Brian said in like a little training class or something that he had done at one point that basically with A2Ls, it's everything that we were already supposed to be doing, but now it's mandatory.
Yeah, so you got to do it now.
Blowing nitrogen, purging nitrogen, things like that. You know, keeping your vacuum pump away from the spark zone, basically.
Novel
things that we
idea.
Already should have been doing. Exactly.
You know, most of that, Jeremy, is because we as males mature at a rate of very slowly. And until you're about 28 or 30 years old, you really can't think anyway as a male. And I'm saying that because I are one. But once it clicks, man, how cool is it to go out and search for this information? And, you know, I'm so freaking, I was telling somebody this morning how envious I am of young people, because to be able to be in an industry like ours now, with the tools we have, the information we have, the podcasts we have, the advocates that are out there that were probably there when I was a kid, but I had no way of reaching them. Other than my little circle of influence. And that was the guys I worked with and my dad. But to be able to be on the rooftop working on a piece of equipment and listening to McCready in my earbud, or Brian Orr in my earbud, or Trevor Matthews in my earbud, or Craig. I mean, all these people that are trying to help us all get better, I'm envious. And
oh, absolutely.
I don't have to drag 1,000 feet of drop cord around with me anymore either, by the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a huge thing too, is once you start figuring out the science of this stuff, like, you know, I mean, being in project sales, I had to, you know, learn how to use a psychrometric chart, which I should have known anyway in the first place. But that is like my, I mean, I have a tattoo of a psychrometric chart now because I love the science of it so much.
You got to call Tony Mormino with that. He'll love that.
Tony. Yeah, I need to meet Tony at some point. I've followed him a lot over the
I'm
years.
Going
You also
to have
mentioned
lunch
Craig.
with him soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he lives
is
in
he in North
Marshall.
Carolina?
He's in
Yeah,
Marshall,
yeah.
just
Okay.
outside of Asheville.
That's right. Yeah. I've been surprised at how many people actually came out of, you know, the South Carolina, North Carolina area that are in this space. But yeah, gosh, what was it? Oh, when the MeasureQuick app came out and I finally got some Bluetooth field piece probes and was able to charge a package unit that I had been looking at for years. Nothing wrong with it at all, but I put gauges on it for a PM one time and it was about 4 ounces low on 410A refrigerant. And I got it so dialed in because I was able to look at delivered capacity on those tools. And it's just, yeah, I agree 100%. I'm almost 40 years old and I am extremely jealous of the younger generation who can just, you know, they don't have to use, they can still use analog gauges all they want to because they're a great thing to have, but it's just, there's so many tools out there that are just
all right,
incredible.
Dude, I'm over 60 years old. So put 20 more years on where you came in. That's scary.
Well, I heard you talking about, I was listening to one this morning of you with the helmet, about the AI, like having a screen in front of you. And you were talking about, I'm afraid that I won't be around for that. And I was like, man, me too, though. Like, I don't know how long I'll be in this.
Well, it's coming, you know, AI. We can have that as a whole nother podcast of how that's influencing our industry. But
absolutely,
just a great time to be in the industry, and I'm so glad that you guys at Carolina or Chillers are, you know, understanding the need, and David and company have you know, made the investment to do this because it's really important. And I've said this a lot lately. People probably think I'm a wacko, but this is a national security issue for the U.S. If we can't take care of our own stuff, and air conditioning is part of that stuff, we're in trouble. And
absolutely,
we have to figure out a way to shorten the learning curve, put more funding, resources, time, training, all that into it so that we get caught up quickly. And part of that is everybody grabbing a couple of youngsters under their arms and say, come with me, let me help you get started.
Absolutely.
We all have the capacity to do that. Do we all have the will and the willingness to do that is a question.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeremy, the clock is looking at me like in a really ugly face because it knows I've got other things that I should be doing this afternoon. Although I would rather talk about what we're talking about because it's such an important topic, but I'm really thrilled that you're part of the next generation of technician training, as well as everybody else at Carolina Chillers. I don't want to be thinking that that's all you care about, but that has to be a germane piece of the puzzle, is the skilled piece. But y'all have a lot of really nice admin folks and sales folks as well. So we don't want to discredit them at all. I really do. I appreciate you taking time with us today and just getting to know a little bit more about Jeremy Clark and what you do and why you do it. It's been interesting. But how can people kind of keep up with what you've got going on? What are your social media outlets that you enjoy?
So not really super into social media, but LinkedIn. I'm trying to get better at LinkedIn. I have we have a person here in our office that is getting on my butt all the time about, posting about trainings that we have and everything like that. We just had an incredible 2-day training that our turnkey project division did without even my help. It was just, just theirs, and it was awesome. But
You tell Tamisha to keep up and keep on you because she does good.
she is incredible, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's on my butt about it for sure. But yeah, if you want to just connect with me on LinkedIn, I'm Jeremy Clark at Service Logic, or at Carolina Chillers, and I really look forward to talking to anybody that might, be interested in getting into the industry, getting better at what you do. If you need, a podcast or a book rec, I'm here for it. I love all that information, and I really want to say thank you to you, Greg, for having me on. You and everybody else that has a podcast in this industry, you're just doing the Lord's work, man, in my opinion, just getting it out there. You're making it cool. That's what I really like, is like having the community around. And like, I'm really looking forward to going to AHR and the symposium next year, and really, being able to talk to all my heroes in person.
Well, dude, plan ahead because those heroes, they are some busy dudes down there. You'll see them running between booths doing these photo shoots. I mean, it's really fun to watch what happens, behind the scenes, but great people in this industry for sure. And we're glad to have you as part of it. Well, folks, thank y'all for taking a little time with us today on a gloomy Carolina kind of day. But I hope this was a little bit of a bright spot and brought you a little more insight as to what Jeremy's got going on with his training and development leadership role. I'm so thrilled for that at a personal level and as part of the company. It's very cool to see. So if you want to learn more about Greg Crumpton, straight out of Crumpton, you can go to gregcrumpton.com. You can go to MarketScale, our cool host who keep this thing going for us. And I want to remind everybody to buy the book. We still have books for sale. You can get that at deepknowledge.me, deepknowledge.me, or also gregcrumpton.com, Barnes and Noble, Amazon, wherever you get it. And I just found out the book's going to be in Italy at a book show. I don't know how many Italian people are going to read my book, but hey, they say no bad press, so we'll take it. But for Greg Crumpton, for Jeremy Clark, thank you all for joining us. We will look forward to talking to you the next go-round.